This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. Today, we continue our conversations with the men who want to be governor, or in John Hickenlooper's case, want to continue to be governor. The Democrat and former Denver mayor is seeking a second term. Yesterday, we heard from his Republican opponent, Bob Beaupre. Today, we sit down with Hickenlooper, who met us at his campaign office in Denver. Thank you for being with us.
Always a pleasure to be back.
And to start, I want you to imagine that you step into an elevator, someone else is in there, and this is an undecided voter who hasn't been paying much attention to the race. You have just a few floors to introduce yourself before the doors open. What do you say to this voter?
The first thing I'd say is, hi, I'm John Hickenlooper. Look at their face of extreme shock. I have my elevator conversation that I have, which basically just describes where we were 4 years ago, that we were $1 billion in the red for the state budget and 40th in job creation. Then we came through 13 federally declared disasters, the two most destructive wildfire seasons in history, and then last year the most destructive flood in the history of the state, all in a three-year period. And yet through it all, we've never lost sight of our mission, right? And our mission to create jobs, turn the economy around. We did the bottom-up economic development plan. We've gone from 40th to 4th in job creation. Our unemployment has now just come down to 4.7%, by far the greatest drop in the Rocky Mountains. We have, become not just the number one workforce in the country, but the number one fastest-growing economy in the country. But we've also reduced teenage pregnancy by 40%. We've expanded the number of people with medical insurance. We're one of the top states in America for doing that.
The doors are about to open.
And we need four more years.
And let me ask you about those four more years. What's one thing you haven't addressed in your first term that you'd like to make a priority if you get a second term?
Well, I think more importantly is all the things we've addressed but we haven't finished. And I think, we started 4 years ago saying Colorado's always been the thinnest state in America, but it's not the healthiest. So we've taken on prescription drug abuse. We've reduced that by 20%. People don't realize how prevalent it's been. I mean, we have now, in 2010, three times more people died of prescription drug abuse than died at the hands of drunk drivers. So it's a significant issue. We have a level of preventative health care and an extension of coverage for health care that is, again, close to the top in the nation. We're not still quite there. So in the next 4 years, I really want to make Colorado the number one state in America for the healthiest state.
And when you say preventative health care, this notion of having a medical home, doctor that you see?
Right. So you're not going to the emergency room. You're actually having a doctor who says, hey, you're overweight, or hey, you have indications that you might have a diabetes or another chronic disease. If we get to it sooner, you can have a much happier life and – you won't have to be under so much medical attention and have to take all the pharmaceuticals. So, I mean, I think you look at all the success we've had in creating jobs, a lot of that is because young people have wanted to come here, right, in record numbers. We were ranked yesterday or the other day, a couple days ago, by the New York Times as the number one destination for college-age kids, 25 to 44, one of the top two or three. They also want to come to a place where there's a healthy lifestyle, right? Not just mountains, but also good health care and good systems. They want to come to a place with good public education. So I think looking at a second term, we want to be able to say, all right, we've added 8,200 early childhood education slots. We passed the READ Act to make sure that the kids finishing third grade can read at grade level. We passed the transparency law that makes sure that, any parent can go to a website and look at the school where their child attends and see how much money goes to teachers, to the building, to the administration. I mean, these are the things that attract especially young people to come live in your community because they're not just coming to start a business or to build a business. They want to build a life, and they're going to invest themselves in their community.
I want to talk more about the economy in just a bit, but to one of the most divisive issues in the state, oil and gas development and what limits should be placed on it. A task force you helped put together is supposed to advise the legislature, which will presumably then make laws. This was all to avoid a collection of measures on this year's ballot that were quite controversial. And as you've said, this is about coming to a long-term solution. Your opponent, Bob Beaupre, said this fracking task force is just kicking the can down the road. The history of task forces is littered with reports that sit on shelves. Why will this be different?
Well, the history of task forces is also littered with great successes. And I think this is one where we are going to have a good chance of success. I mean, you've got two legitimate rights, the right of someone to quiet enjoyment of their home without a drilling rig across the street, but also someone who owned those mineral rights across the street and oftentimes owned them before the home was ever built. Government shouldn't come in and take that away. So we're trying to balance those rights. And where we do have conflict, where there is an existing mineral right that's close to where someone is living or, you know, place of congregation, how can we mitigate that? And I think that's what the commission is going to have the opportunity to say, all right, if you're within 1,000 feet or 2,000 feet of a home, you have to drill with electrical drilling instead of the loud diesel engines, right? Use rubber grommets so it's actually quiet. You need to shroud the drill rig so that all those lights aren't disturbing people's evening. After it's drilled, you need to either use pipelines to get the natural gas or the oil out of there, or if you use tanks, put them underground. Put the whole wellhead underground so people can look across the street and that they'll still see that old meadow. Make sure that you have a gauge so that you can measure any escape natural gas so that you can guarantee the neighborhood that someone's living, you know, even 2,000 feet away. You want to be able to guarantee them that their air is just as clean as it ever was.
And the point is that these recommendations could come out of the task force. And well, then the next question, the next challenge is, does the legislature do anything with them? I think to the wildfire task force that you had some hand in, you know, lots of recommendations, very few of them adopted by the legislature. So will you play an active role if you are elected to a second term in working the legislature and getting measures from the task force through?
Sure. I think that if the task force has a high hurdle, right, they've got to get 2/3 of the people to support a recommendation for it to go to the legislature. So at that point, you really – I mean, that body is almost evenly split between Republicans and Democrats, and there are some of the leading Republicans and leading Democrats in our state are sitting there. So if they can all find agreement, I will be hard-pressed not to think that the legislature should be able to act on it, and I will work as hard as I can to make sure that their recommendations do get passed.
Is that a big if, though?
I don't think so. I think people on both sides want to see this compromise worked out.
So you've said already in this conversation and frequently on the campaign trail that Colorado's gone from 40th to 4th in job creation. But by several measures, income inequality in Colorado is bad. Colorado's in the bottom half nationally. And median income adjusted for inflation has actually fallen since 2007, despite all the good news about Colorado's economy. What can you do as governor that perhaps you're not doing now to address the fact that economic growth is in some ways benefiting a smaller portion of Coloradans?
Well, and we're representative of the entire country. So we're seeing this across the country, and it's a serious problem. We're looking at certain places where we can make maximum impact, long-term unemployed. Just like the rest of the nation, Colorado still has a significant problem with long-term unemployed, you know, close to 20,000 people. Our focus is if we can form a partnership with the business community and not force them, but ask them, if you're going to hire 10 people next year, can one of them be someone who's been long-term unemployed? Then we will, through community colleges or workforce centers, we will make sure we train them on whatever skills you say you need for that person to be trained in. So you'll get a new employee who's experienced and has the skills you need.
Now, is that happening now, or this is something you are proposing?
No, we're working on. Well, we can't propose it because we've been working on this for a couple of months, several months. I think we'll probably roll this out in January or February.
Why hasn't that come up earlier in a Hickenlooper administration?
I can give you 50 things that should have come up earlier. I mean, we've had, 13 federally declared disasters. We had the shooting in Aurora. We had an economy that's completely upside down. You try to prioritize what you do first, but there are only so many hours in a day. You know, I think that the issues over kids, right? How much I met a guy, 26 or 27, a school teacher, and he graduated from college in Colorado with $120,000 in debt. I mean, he'll be paying that off till he's 50. We ought to be able to prevent that, right? We ought to be able to have either a combination of work study and loans and scholarships and then low enough tuition so that we set a ceiling.
Colorado is in a year after year funding crisis in education. $1 billion was cut from school budgets during the recession. Other states in this position have come up with some long-term plans. Here, Amendment 66 on the ballot failed. The Lobato suit to increase school funding failed in court. The Taxpayer Bill of Rights, which is in the state constitution, limits your ability to raise taxes. What kind of long-term solution do you see in Colorado?
Well, first, you know, exactly the direct correlation between how much you spend and how well your students succeed is unclear. And I can show you other states on the East Coast that have that spend almost double what we spend, and their outcomes aren't – they're better, but are they really – they're certainly not double what ours are. You know, I'm looking at – I think the state should be looking at solutions that – like a longer school day, a longer school year, some of those things that will cost more, but they're not extravagantly more, and see if we can measure how much benefit that would – that would provide if we rolled it out statewide.
In a state with local control, do you have the power as governor to say we're lengthening the school day?
No, but I think we can provide resources and saying, should you choose to have a longer school year or a longer school day, here are the kind of resources that, you know, we'll apply for federal funds. We'll get up some of our own money for that purpose. I also think that, you know, we passed the Transparency Act last spring, and this is going to, once the website is completed, any parent will be able to look at the school at which their child attends and see how much money is actually going to the teachers, how much is going to the building, how much is going to the administration, how much goes to the school district. And if you want to talk about binding parents to and investing them in their children's schools, give them the real facts. And I think it will have a profound effect on parents getting out there and organizing and lobbying for their kids and trying to find different resources from wherever they come to make sure that their kids get a fair chance.
Well, do I hear then an elected official who's saying there is no pot of gold? The changes in terms of budget for education have to be incremental, have to be small, have to be calculated?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, they probably do have to be incremental. And I think they have to be very transparent. I think in Colorado, Tabor allows every citizen, and I'm not sure this is a bad thing, it allows every citizen to make a decision. If I'm going to pay more in any kind of a tax, what do I get? What's the state get? Is it really worth our while? And my experience suggests that the more people understand the details of how that money is going to be spent, and as long as they really are convinced that they're going to get, you know, a significant benefit, right, that the overall improvement is worth the cost, then I think the Coloradans are willing to make those investments.
So with this transparency website you've talked about, if you give parents more information, is this a way in your eyes of getting more support for something on the ballot again, something 66-like in the future?
I'm not sure I'd go in that direction. I think initially it'll be more incremental and localized. But, you know, local communities deciding to raise their mill levies and raise more money for their own school district is a haphazard solution. And it's certainly in rural parts of the state where they really don't have the capacity to raise mill levies significantly. They don't have the valuations that other parts of the state do. It becomes much more difficult to look at that as a long-term solution.
You mentioned the potential of drawing down federal funds, for instance, to pay for a longer school day. Your opponent, Bob Beaupre, points out that Colorado is at the bottom when it comes to federal money coming in for education. And he says a governor ought to do more to get those funds. Now, you've attributed this to Colorado's relative wealth, but other affluent states are getting more per pupil than Colorado. Could your administration be doing more to draw down federal dollars for education here?
Well, so what I attributed it to was our affluence and the amount of state funding provided per student to our schools. And if you look at these affluent states where they have done a better job of getting these federal funds, it is significantly those states that have much higher taxes and spend much more money on their students. Now, that's counterintuitive, right?
Right. You'd think that would draw down fewer federal dollars.
But they're providing these – a lot of these federal grants are provided as an incentive that states should invest more in their schools.
Matching grants?
It's similar, but they're really – they set standards and bars within the calculus by which these grants are measured. So I think we're doing – I mean, we've got full-time people that all they do is go through what are the grants available. You know, when we went after Race to the Top, we came very close to winning that. We didn't win that. That alone would have taken us and put us right in the top 10 or 20%.
But you look at the census data that Beaupre has pointed us to, and Colorado is at the bottom. Only Utah ranks lower. Could it be higher up? Should your staff be working harder to identify that money?
Well, I trust our staff is working as hard as they can. And certainly there's always the possibility of finding additional resources. In this instance, obviously the Colorado Commission on Education, I don't control, right? So that's a separately elected board. They're in charge. They have hire the education commissioner for K-12 for the entire state. They assure us that they are doing, all things possible to raise whatever resources they can.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner. The Democratic candidate for governor is our guest. John Hickenlooper is the incumbent in this race. We heard from his Republican opponent, Bob Beaupre, yesterday. More with Governor Hickenlooper after a break. He'll talk about his leadership style, his decision to temporarily put on hold the execution of a death row inmate, and he reflects on his comments made during a recent debate that Colorado voters were reckless to legalize recreational marijuana. First, a few fact checks. Hickenlooper put the number of long-term unemployed in the state around 20,000. According to the Colorado Department of Labor and Employment, the number is significantly higher. 51,700 have been without work for more than half a year. And Hickenlooper said Colorado has the fastest growing economy in the country. His campaign points to a ranking from the website Business Insider. According to the Federal Bureau of Economic Analysis, Colorado had the fifth highest GDP growth in 2013. And we'll be right back. This is CPR News. Welcome back to Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. Yesterday, we dove into the issues with Republican gubernatorial candidate Bob Beaupre. Today, it's his Democratic opponent, incumbent John Hickenlooper. I want to talk to you about your leadership style. You've emphasized your ability to compromise. Your critics in this campaign have called you weak and indecisive. They point to the case of Nathan Dunlap, the murderer whose execution you put off indefinitely but didn't reverse. You've said that you want Coloradans to have a broader conversation about the death penalty first. Is part of being a good leader arriving at a decision, not just considering other people's ideas and viewpoints?
Well, I mean, we came at a decision, right? The state constitution requires the governor in an issue of capital punishment to make one of three decisions, either execution, clemency, or temporary reprieve.
And some see the third as a half measure.
Well, they can say what they want, but it's a full third equal measure in the way our constitution is written. So they can argue that. If I was running against somebody else, I'd try to manufacture attacks as well, right, or some way to say that what they're doing isn't good leadership. We knew for a fact that issue was not going to be popular, right? And we looked at all the facts and, you need 12 jurors, you need a unanimous decision to execute someone. Well, three of the 12 jurors signed affidavits saying that if they'd known how severely bipolar Nathan Dunlap was, they wouldn't have voted for execution. So you have to look at some – now, that again, that evidence came in after the jury had made their verdict, but it was looked at in the various appeals. So does that – should I pull the rug out from under the entire legal system? What we were trying to do, what my intention was to say that, A, and I think it's a legitimate question, I don't think government – I mean, we all make these decisions based on how we were raised and our relationship with our God. But I don't think government should take someone's life. I came to that. I didn't start out that way. But I looked at the real facts as carefully as I could. At that point, should I pull the rug out from under the entire legal system and all the process we've gone through, knowing that in the state, I'm not the king, right? That it's still very popular. The idea of an execution or capital punishment is still quite popular in Colorado. My gut feeling is, as people hear more of the facts, a lot of them will change their minds. But certainly many don't, right? One thing to always remember is the fact that Nathan Dunlap, no matter what, is going to die in prison. No matter what decisions are made, he's going to die in prison.
That is to say, even if you commuted the death sentence, his sentence is substantial enough that he's not getting out.
Well, any commutation of capital punishment converts to life in prison without parole. So he would, no matter what, die in prison.
Well, but this is interesting. So what you said there is you don't believe that you should take another life.
Right.
And there are many who would say, gosh, if I were elected the closest thing Colorado has to a king, right, which is governor, the highest executive office in a democracy. Well, darn straight, I have a mandate. I'm going to say, no, there should not be the death penalty. But that is not the kind of a view you have of this position.
No, I think that I am in many ways I'm the leader of the state, but I'm not the dictator. I'm not someone that gets to make moral decisions based on, you know, again, the way I was raised or my relationship with my God.
Even though the Constitution says you could.
Yeah, absolutely. The Constitution gives me all kinds of powers I choose not to exercise because I don't think it's in the best interest of the state.
Can you give us examples of other constitutional powers you've sought not to exercise?
Well, I mean, there's lots that I don't think I want to go, because once I say that, you'll come back and say I'm thinking of using them. But certainly in states of emergency, there's enumerated lists of things that in a flood or a serious issue, the governor can take certain actions, which generally I think the state works better. The governor can, by working with their local communities and really exercising a collaborative approach, you get much better results.
That is to say, if a curfew needs to occur or something, asking the town or the county to consider that. Is that right?
Sure. Or you know, when you're looking at response to a fire or a flood and how people are housed, how the emergency response goes, the state's job, I think, is to be a partner with the local communities, right? I think our system works much better that you don't bang heads on who's got the jurisdiction or the final say in these things. You try to work together.
Last year, you signed two highly controversial gun control measures, restricting magazine sizes and requiring universal background checks. You've said you're happy in general with the background check expansion. You say that it has stopped people you don't think should have guns from having them. But this year, you told the state's sheriffs that the restrictions on magazine sizes was a mistake.
Well, I said it was problematic. I didn't say it was a mistake. I said in the end, when I talked to them, I said I would sign both bills again.
Problematic. Is there anything you'd like to do in a second term as governor to make them less problematic?
Well, what I said to the sheriffs, and I still believe, we could have done a better job making sure that everyone got their opinion heard.
But that's means, not end. Is there anything you'd change about the end?
No, not in those two cases.
So to be clear, you would not foresee in a second Hickenlooper administration any change to the magazine limits?
No, I don't. I don't see that happening. Those decisions were made.
And any further action when it comes to guns, do you think?
No, I haven't seen anything come across our desk that seems likely or, to be honest, nothing has been presented.
During your first term, several Colorado counties tried to secede from the state. Some of the folks in these counties were frustrated with the gun laws, another measure requiring more renewable energy in rural Colorado. The secession efforts failed. But you said in the wake of them that you'd spend more time in rural Colorado, hearing their issues. Besides visiting those parts of the state more, can they expect something different if there's a second Hickenlooper term?
Absolutely. I mean, I think we've gone and visited those parts of the state. I mean, we've been to the West Slope and to the Eastern Plains more, I think, than any governor in history in terms of the total number of visits.
Is that something we can verify?
Probably. I mean, I don't know whether other administrations, how much records they've kept, but we've kept the records of how many, I mean, dozens and dozens and dozens. You know, the bottom line is you don't have to twist my arm too far to get me out of Denver, to go out and visit the Eastern Plains, Sterling, or to go down to Lamar. I mean, these are beautiful parts of the state.
And is that resulting in meaningful shifts in view or policy?
Well, I think it allows me to hear their perspective, and I think it will make for better legislation. And certainly in controversial issues, I'm going to lobby as hard as I can. I can't control what the legislature does. This is not that kind of a state system. But I can use the bully pulpit to say we need more public hearing time and more ways to make sure that people from the rural part of the state get their voice heard. And I think that's only fair.
You've never been a fan of legalizing recreational marijuana. And in a recent debate, you called the voters reckless for having passed it. What do you say to voters who take that personally?
Well, I changed that. You know, that was in a debate where they asked you, do you think it was reckless to pass marijuana? And, I knew that there was a lot of risk. We've been talking about all the risk. And on the spur of the moment, I said yes. you know, that that was reckless. You know, when I reflected on it, I realized that is an insult to voters. And they weren't reckless. They recognized the system that was there before had a lot of failings, right? Millions of kids sent to jail with felony convictions just for selling small amounts of marijuana. The question, what I was trying to get across was the point that this is that there's a great deal of risk that we took on by being the first state to do this. And we've seen some of the consequences of that, right? We've seen the dosages in some of the edibles where you could take one brownie and there'd be eight doses in it and some very tragic consequences from those mistakes. So I stand by the fact that there were and still are risks, but we're doing everything we can to make sure that we keep improving the system, that we make sure that kids aren't getting access to marijuana. We know that this high THC marijuana has the potential with teenagers when their brain is still maturing, that it has the high potential to diminish or permanently impair their long-term memory. Well, kids don't know that. So we recognize these risks, but we're doing everything we can to move forward and minimize them as much as possible. And, you know, I think it's way too premature to say we should go back. You know, Congressman Beaupre has said that if he had the choice, he would lead the effort to repeal the legalization of marijuana. And I'm not sure at that point.
As an entrepreneur, do you not at all get excited by the prospects that legal marijuana allows? The prospects for business, the prospects for jobs, the prospects for new products. You were an entrepreneur before joining politics, and you've spoken often about your opposition to legal recreational marijuana. But you know there are many who are salivating at the business prospects. And do you ever find yourself in that position, thinking this could draw something to Colorado that's positive?
No, I think the risks are significant enough that we need to address all those risks before we start, you know, getting too excited about the business, the tax revenues, or the additional business or jobs that come to the state. You know, when I talk to young people, teenagers, and I say, well, so what do you think about pot? Most of them say, well, it's not any worse for you than beer. And that's, you know, every top brain scientist, neuroscientist that I talk to feels that there's a high probability that kids could lose part of their long-term memory if they even just once or twice a week smoking this high THC pot. I don't think any number of jobs or any number of tax or any amount of tax revenue is worth taking that kind of risk with our young kids, our young people.
Thanks for being with us.
Sure.
Democrat John Hickenlooper is Colorado's governor, and he wants to keep the job. A few facts to check. He said in talking about the death penalty that three jurors in the Nathan Dunlap trial would have voted to send him to prison for life had they known about his mental illness. It's actually that they might have voted for a life sentence had they known, according to a clemency petition filed in 2013. And finally, Hickenlooper said moments ago that his Republican opponent, Bob Beaupre, would, quote, lead the effort to repeal the legalization of marijuana. That's not what Beaupre told us in our interview yesterday. He said he'd, quote, listen to the will of the people on the issue, and
if people decide that they want to amend or reform what they passed in Amendment 64, then we have that conversation and we have that vote.
You can hear Beaupre's full interview from yesterday's show at cprnews.org. Also at the website, the minor party candidates for governor respond to our policy questions. This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio.